everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dadcast. My name is JP. I am your host. And the other host, the man over there, Mr. Nick Martin. Hello, sir. How you doing today?
Fantastic. I'm in my air-conditioned office.
Oh.
I'm selling cars in the 106-degree heat.
So. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, you know, I see how it is. Well, thankfully, here in my studio today, we're early enough in the day to where I'm not dying. So I'm doing just fine.
That's awesome.
Yes, sir. Today on the show, we have an amazing guest. We actually we're flipping the script with today's guest. Normally, this man does the interviewing, and it's pretty cool because we get to do that today. And doing a deep dive on him earlier, I actually stumbled upon his social media, and I saw his post that he said the exact same thing. He's not used to being, you know, the interviewee, and he doesn't do it too terribly often. So we are very, very honored and much respect for allowing us to do this with him today. You may be asking, who is the who? Well, the who is a doctor with decades of nutritional and natural health experience and a passion for helping others improve their health. We have on the show Dr. Ward Bond. Hello, sir. How are you, man? Welcome to Dadcast.
Man, it's great to be here, Jeff and Nick, and let's have some fun. I'm not used to being on this end. I think this is probably the third interview I've ever been a guest in my entire life.
Fantastic.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, well, and again, thank you. You know, just two old dads from Oregon getting the opportunity to do this with you. We appreciate it so much. I am going to throw out there, I think you may have just let out a very big secret without even knowing, but I go by JP, but I think the name Jeff might have been on the emails that we sent back and forth, which happens from time to time. So for everyone watching out there, just erase that from your memory, and we'll go as JP.
That works. I mean, I have friends of mine that will literally call me Dr. 007, so that works too.
It's from my radio career when I first got into the business many years ago. You know, they powers that be said you should probably not use your real name and come up with some other DJ name. So I just used my initials, JP, and the rest is history. Now everyone knows me as such until I visit the family back home, and then they call me Jeff, and they don't know what, you know, people around me are like, who's that? It's funny. Dr. Ward Bond, as a rite of passage right here on Dadcast, the very first question we always tend to ask, and it is, like I said, rite of passage. We already know the answer, but we're going to ask it anyway. Good sir, are you a dad?
Yes, I am. I have one son, one daughter.
One son, what are their ages?
Oh, boy. I'm going to date myself here. Let me see. 32 is the son, and 27 is the daughter.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I'll tell you something really funny. I was on a flight one day leaving Houston, and I was sitting by a gentleman, and for some reason we got into some small talk, and I think at the time I'd probably been married like 30 years, and he looked at me and he's like, "What did you do? Get married when you were 10?"
Yeah.
I was just gonna say the same thing. How do you have a 32-year-old? You definitely do not look old enough to have a 32-year-old.
No, I hide my age very, very well.
Well, I think it also plays into exactly what the man does for a living and has been doing for a living. Nutritionalist, all that good. Tell us a little bit about that, your background.
Yeah, boy, I've got a PhD in nutrition back in 1999. I've got an extensive background in herbal medicine. They kind of piggyback each other very, very well. And because I had been in television for, I think it's 22 years now, in the beginning, it's what was funny. You know what a PDR is? Physician's desk reference.
I do now. And, yes.
List, you know, back in the day, we had a book that lists all the drugs. Now you just go online and look up your medication. But I was literally forced to read the PDR to learn more about drugs than actually nutrition, because all of the people that would come to me asking health questions, everybody was heavily medicated. And it comes down to, you know, what can you do? What side effects or interactions you can avoid? And so part of it, you end up learning things that you didn't know you were going to learn, but it comes with the territory.
So is one of those things that you have learned was how to have amazing hair like Dr. Ward Bond well into your 40s and 50s?
Well, the good thing is that my father had a full head of hair into his early 60s. I think I have the youthful gene that comes from my mom. She doesn't really age at all either. So I'm trying to keep that going. So it's all about eating right and plenty of exercise.
Well, you're doing it right, good sir. So tell me about these kids' ears. I know we, you know, here on Dadcast, of course, we like to keep the conversation as much as we can about our kids and the path that we've had as fathers and bringing them up. And we don't too many times have the opportunity to speak with guests who are parents of adult children. They're usually, you know, in toddlers, infants, or in the fact of Nick's case, spanning the entire thing, ranging from in utero to 30 years old. But as a parent to adult children, is the time, has there been any, has been more difficulties parenting adult children than it was bringing them up? Or have you come across?
That's kind of a tough question. I think it's, well, you know, the thing is, as parents, the moment you have your first kid, and it doesn't matter if you've had your fifth kid, we're never given a manual on how to raise them. We raise them according to what we have learned from our parents. And of course, we should know and not hold it against our parents if they did it right or if they did it wrong. It's on the job training. And I thought that, you know, everybody kept saying, oh, get ready for the terrible twos. What is that? And I thought the first 2 years was the easiest. Yeah. I thought the first 2 years was the easiest.
Yeah, I agree. I do. Nick's going to disagree, and he's going to let us know here shortly. Yeah. But I found, you know, continue the story, and I will. Nick, tell him. Yeah, you go ahead.
Who? What was
you? You the terrible twos. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So I have six kids and a seventh on the way
in utero.
My first five kids. You're right. The terrible twos. It didn't exist. There were no terrible twos. Liam, my 2 year old. Is awful. I love this kid, but he is like, he'll go from being the sweetest kid in the world to 30 seconds later just being absolutely crazy, nuts, upset, and it'll flip with like every 2 minutes. It's a different personality, and I've never experienced this. So it's like definitely on the job training, and it's like, oh my gosh, what is happening? I totally understand what the terrible twos are now.
Yeah, see, the thing that I remember is my son always slept through the night. None of this waking up every 2 hours, wanting to be fed, things of that sort. My daughter, on the other hand, she would wake up a little bit more often. But to me, it was no big deal. You know, you see parents being portrayed in movies, and they act like that they're up 24 hours a day, and I never experienced that.
Yeah,
I'm in the thick of it.
I mean, with a seventh on the way, I can guarantee you one thing. Trojan will never come to you to sponsor you.
Well, Nick's got a great story. I feel weird telling it, but I'm gonna, Nick. He, you know, had, you know, five children, and then you know, got snipped. And then years went by, and then he met the new lady, now his wife, and convinced him to get unsnipped so she could have children. So that's how this has worked out for him, you know, now in his mid-40s, late 40s, as far as having kids. So Trojan, I think we need more of a surgeon specialist sponsor for you when it comes to that.
I'm surprised that the reversals actually worked. I've heard guys get it, but I've never realized it worked.
It was interesting. It kind of worked. We had to do IVF. So there's definitely some of it worked, some of it didn't work, and there's a lot of doctor help. So luckily we have a very, very good fertility doctor up in Eugene, Oregon. That's amazing. That was able to make it happen. So,
all right.
What for you then? Yeah. So there were no terrible twos. For you, doctor, but what were, and I promise we'll get to the positives here. What, if any, negatives were the tough times raising your children?
I think the tough times were middle school and high school, but it wasn't what's going on outside of the school. It was going on what goes on inside the school and dealing with teachers. I mean, I grew up where education was different than it is today. Today, there is no such thing as education. I mean, it's the worst thing I've ever seen.
Can you relate on that?
Parents, yeah, because when I hear parents saying, you know, we're homeschooling our kids, good for you, because they'll end up being probably a lot smarter. But, you know, when I grew up, I mean, you went to school, there was discipline. You respected the teacher, regardless if they were great, regardless if you thought they were mean as heck. But in the end, you know, I can look back and think, you know, at that time, thinking of the meanest teachers I ever had, they were the ones I respected the most. And but when my kids were going up through the school system, man, I was not to be messed with. And I had one episode where, I think my daughter was in middle school, and the grading system really sucked. So it's kind of like, on Monday, they give them homework. If you return the homework the next day, you got 100. If you return the homework 2 days later, you got a 50. And so one day she brings me, so I said, hey, let me see, you know, some of your homework. I'm just kind of curious. And I go, and it's kind of like multiple choice or true and false. And I'm scanning the page and I'm like, wait a minute, that's wrong. That's wrong. Okay, you got that one right. But if you turned in your homework the next day, everybody got 100. I mean, it's like, you know, everybody gets a trophy.
Right, yeah. If you win or lose. I was just thinking that.
And I'm thinking, wait a minute, this is not education. I believe in kids being taught. So if you're going to teach them something, make sure that they got the answer right. Because if you let the wrong answers go by, then the rest of their life, they're going to think that's right. So if, yeah. I look at it as if my kid is in a conversation with somebody about, who knows, world history or whatever, and they were taught that the facts were accepted as wrong, but they don't know it's wrong. My kid's going to look stupid in public in a major conversation. And let's just say that I made a personal visit inside that classroom and told that teacher, don't you ever do it again.
Nice. And
if
you're
going to be a teacher, you grade it.
Yeah.
And you tell them, this one's wrong, this one's right, and help them to correct it. Because in the end, it's called education. You want to leave there with knowledge, not stupidity and ignorance.
Did it work?
Never had a problem from her again.
I'd say that works then. All right. And the kids, I got through the high school and graduated, and I'm assuming they're, you know, they're smart and everything's working out okay.
Oh, very. My kids are extremely smart. Actually, I will say this: all the guitars in the background behind me, except for one, the blue one's mine, but the rest of them belong to them. They are very musically talented. Whatever they put their mind to, they remember it, and great success.
That is amazing. Remind me one more time their ages.
My son is 32. My daughter is 27.
Okay. So I'm going to take you back 33 years. If, you know, I try to do that. I have issues. So I understand if you do too. I want to try
it. Issues.
I want to take you back 33 years. If we can, you find out you are going to become a dad for the very first time. Can you recall the emotions?
Yeah. You know, my wife says, let me see if I can go back. We were at our first house in the living room, and she tells me we're going to have a kid. And when I heard it, it's like, okay, wow. Now what?
I
see, you know, how people react. You see all this Instagram stuff where everybody's jumping for joy and all this. I'm more like, you know, sometimes I think I'm slow to learn, and you go on. I think we had already been married like 5 years. And when she told me, it's not like we were planning it.
Right.
It was there. And hey, okay, then we'll be parents 9 months later.
Let's go. So let's fast forward 9 months later. What was that experience like for you? Were you in the room?
Yes. It was, I'm trying to remember, there was an issue. What do they call it? Placenta previa or something.
Right.
And she had to have a C-section. And of course, you know, once they, you know, get them opened up for the C-section, then they usually allow the dad to come in. And so I sat next to her when they brought my son into the world. And then 5 years later for my daughter, that, because we knew what had happened the first time, then the second time was planning the date.
Right. Okay. Wow. Yeah. I love these stories. And, you know, because everyone's journey is a little bit different.
Yeah, because we, you know, well, my wife, she was believing. So, like, you know, she wanted one boy, one girl, and that's what we got. And we're like, okay, we got two. We're good.
Yeah, I was the same way. I was, well, going into the relationship with the mother of my children, we're still together. I like to say inherited a child. So I am the stepdad to a now almost 18-year-old. She's 17 going on 30. But she was, you know, 3 years old at the time when I joined her life. And, you know, dad's in the picture as well. So that's another dynamic we maybe can talk on. But so I had, you know, the stepdaughter, but no children of my own that I've ever had. And same scenario. Hey, we're going to have a kid. And I says, are you sure? She's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. Okay. And that was my son. And then next 2.5 years later, baby girl, boom, completed the set. Bam. Two tries, knocked him out of the park both times. And here we are. So now 17, almost 12 and 9 years old.
Yeah. See, ours wasn't even planned. I mean, oh, ta-da.
Yeah. Well, yeah, these weren't planned either. That I can recall.
Yeah. So, you know? I mean, that was cool with me. I mean, that's fine. So.
Awesome. Amazing stuff. Now, because of who you are and what you do as a nutritionalist and, you know, health and that whole gamut of things you run, did you, when raising your children and feeding them, were you different than other parents when it came to, you know, the health aspects of your children?
I mean, we weren't crazy vegan hippies.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Let's be real. You know, crazy vegan hippies doing CrossFit every day. No, that wasn't us.
Okay.
And, but, you know, I think the biggest thing was, is as they were growing up, my side of things when it came to health, I was, you know, a lot of the people that I talked to were probably 50 plus. So I wasn't dealing with mothers asking nutritional questions, dealing with kid questions. So I was really learning along with that. And but what I did learn early on was that, you know, if you can, I mean, this is a nutritional lesson. And if you want to forgive my my landscapers outside doing.
Can't even hear them, man.
Okay, good.
You're good.
All right. And so what I had to learn was, well, both of them dealt with issues with ear infections, which a lot of parents, a lot of their kids deal with that. And of course, now that once they got grown up, are teenagers, I was already at the level where I understood why those things happened. And so it was like on the job training on the nutritional side of things. But, you know, we weren't feeding them junk and things of that sort. It was just normal life is what I would call it. You know, we weren't super, super strict and things of that sort. But, you know, I know parents that are, and I've interviewed mothers who have absolutely strict guidelines when it comes to food and things of that sort. And hey, great. And their kid will be healthier. So good for them. But I'd put us in the category of normal parents.
All right. And so no crazy vegan hippies.
No.
I want to flip the script for just a few minutes, sure, if you don't mind. Because, again, we rarely have the opportunity to speak with someone in your role. So, Dr. Ward Bond, I would like 5-10 minutes. Now we're on your show. On the spot, go.
Go on the spot. So what am I supposed to do? Ask you questions?
Sure. Whatever you do on your show.
Right, well, JP and Nick, how in the world did you find life behind the microphone?
Oh, Nick, you want to start or you want me to go?
Yeah, I'll take this one. So about May 2020, my son was born and ended up in the NICU, and I reached out to JP because we're in the midst of the pandemic. I couldn't go see him. So we got together. We've been talking about a podcast for a while. JP threw out Dadcast because we're dads and awesome. So we talked dad stuff and got through stuff. His wife had been diagnosed with breast cancer about the same time. And so we just kind of bounced stuff off each other, blew off some steam. And then it led into getting some celebrity guests, which kind of made us explode on social media. And here we are. That's
wow.
Kind of
so, so
JP's got a way better story for his behind the microphone.
Well, go ahead, JP. Your
right.
turn.
Well, he left a few things out in between that story. But as I mentioned to you off the air prior, I've been in the radio industry for, 20 years now here in Southern Oregon. It started when I first moved here. You asked how I got behind this thing. So this is what started it. I moved here. I knew nobody, but I knew that I enjoyed singing and drinking beer. This is pre-fatherhood, and there was a thing called Rogue Nights that the local radio station put on Tuesday nights. And the name of the radio station was 96.9 The Rogue. Karaoke, drinks, win prizes, meet the DJ. So I went and had a few drinks, and I met the DJ and got cocky because that's me. You know, I'm a pretty confident guy, and said, hey, I can do what you do. Are you guys hiring? And, you know, to make this story short, they were hiring. I went in, I did an audition, and I got the job. 20 years later, I've been a program director, music director, a janitor, an IT guy, you know, I'll clean the bath. I did everything in between when it comes to radio.
Yeah, but you got the voice.
Yes, yes. That's and the face for radio, too, from what I've been told. And in doing this job, I've met, you know, so many musicians and celebrities and done interviews and met, you know, many, many, many clients. Nick was originally a client. He would do concert promotions in the area, and he would come to the radio stations for help promoting whatever act came into town. That's how we met, and we became friends. We've done a bunch of shows together. He'd call on me if he ever needed help promoting something, or, you know, maybe DJing or MCing an event. So that's how him and I came together. And with my past knowledge and experience with all things radio and audio and commercial production, et cetera, I knew how to put on a podcast and make it sound good. And
there you go.
Well, that is how
let me back up.
Yeah.
Well, let me back up because, Nick, you said that the podcast started. You had a newborn baby that was incubated, but you could not see them. Explain that.
So with COVID in Southern Oregon, they limited the guests to one person. So my wife and I made the decision to have her go and stay there because we didn't want the baby to be in the hospital by himself. It was just that was a no-go at all. So it was the first stint was, I think, 4 weeks in the NICU. Because when he came out, he didn't know how to eat. So the doctor scared us and said, hey, if he doesn't eat within the next 3 or 4 hours, he's going to have brain damage. And we need to rush him to Medford, which is 30 minutes away from our town, and put him in the NICU. And they put all the tubes in him, the feeding tubes, and put him in a little incubator thing for, I think he was in the incubator for about a week. So it was really, really scary. And I got to see him for an hour once a week. And I couldn't touch him. I had to get all masked up, wrapped up, and look like a mummy pretty much, go into the room and stand back, and I could look at him. So that's how that went.
And so then, how long did it take till you were able to finally hold him?
It was the second stint in the NICU. So he came home for a couple of days and he got sick again. And then he went back and they let me come in an hour a week and I got to hold him for that hour. So it was really rough. There was really rough to bond with him. He's very much a mama's boy. It took, after he finally got home, it took us about 6 months before he was okay with me. I don't think he knew who I was. So now he's my best friend. He's my little buddy. But it was very, very different than any other kid I've had. And just as far as the bonding goes and all that kind of stuff. So that's the backstory on the whole NICU thing. With the pandemic, it was just really, really crazy of no guests, nobody allowed in the hospital, completely covered up if you do walk in the hospital. And
Well, so you the dad cast was birthed from the pandemic.
Yes,
definitely.
Yeah, I feel you and I hear you on that one. I mean, I actually look at the, you know, a lot of people go, oh gosh, a pandemic. Yeah, there was a bunch of craziness and a bunch of stupid decisions being made on the American people's part, but it ended up being, for on our side, it ended up being a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, I wholeheartly agree.
Neither one of us ever thought it would get. We thought it would get big. I don't think we ever thought it would get as big as fast as it did.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely, you know, been a blessing and very, very cool.
Yeah, and I'm just going to say this really quickly because I don't dwell on it. And I've had some of my television viewers ask me, why did you not talk about COVID on your show? And easy answer, it was too political. And if you want to end your career really, really fast, start telling the truth.
Right.
In the unemployment line.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept my mouth shut. I knew what the heck was going on. I still know what's going on, but kept my mouth shut. But the greatest thing is I live in Texas. So when people go mask wearing, most of us are going, what's that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we actually touched upon COVID because we're not afraid of a little controversy. And those were some of our actual most viewed videos at the time, because we weren't playing sides. We were playing Geneva. We were in the middle and we wanted to hear from both sides just to, you know, to see what the argument was. And we talked with some local mayor or councilman and et cetera, et cetera. And those were some of our good episodes. Crazy.
I've got viewers and listeners that are on the radical side, and I'm talking on both sides. I mean, there's none of this getting close in the middle kind of thing.
Right.
It was like you either far left over here or you're far right. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. I don't have time for this. Yep. And like I use a motto, I don't do drama. And I don't create it.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just,
Oregon's a lot like that. Where we're at, it's very right winged and very.
We're Texas.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. And Northern Oregon is like New York.
Yeah.
I
think a lot of the approach on our whole COVID stuff was just be kind. Like I noticed a lot of times, like with my son and his health issues, I was very worried about taking him to the grocery store and having him around a different virus than what we've seen. So people would actually be very rude when I'd go in and have a mask on. And I'm like, you know what? It's uncalled for. If I choose to wear a mask, whatever.
Yeah. Look,
it's just be cool.
Look, yeah. And here's the way I looked at the whole mask thing. Of course. Yeah. The majority of the time it ticked me off because I knew that it was a waste of time and all that kind of crap. So the thing is that everyone should, if that's what you want to do, respect and go on. But everybody looked at it that if you didn't wear one or if you wore one, you were making a political statement. You were choosing sides.
Right. Yeah. And
for a lot of people, that's not right because, Nick, you know firsthand, and I've talked to a lot of people who had loved ones in the hospital that they couldn't go see.
Mm-hmm.
But this whole thing is extremely political. It was more political than it had to do about health, and it was a subject that, I mean, let me see, it was we knew it was coming. Well, we knew it was coming January. I knew it was coming in September 2019, but that's all I'll say. And when February hit of 2020, we had a meeting and I said, I am not going to talk about this. And then when they said, oh yeah, 2 weeks to flatten the curve, yeah, whatever. I like to punch the guy in the face who said that, but
3 years down the road.
Yeah.
But the thing is as it started to extend, I'm like, no, I am not touching this. Now I would do things like I would do segments that were, these are antiviral nutrients or antiviral herbs, what pH should your body be in to be optimal for the immune system to ward off viruses. But I would never mention it by name. I treated it as a general health subject just to stay out of trouble, because being on national television, I am not about to end my career over something that's not going to be around forever, regardless what anybody says.
Yeah, and no matter which side you decided to take, like you said, you're going to alienate the other half. And
Well, yeah, because here's the thing. We're not Howard Stern, and we're not Joe Rogan sitting on $100 million a year and saying anything we want to and continue to get paid.
Yes.
I mean, we can open up our mouth and then lose our livelihood, and I wasn't going to play that game.
Yeah.
Smart man. Smart man right there.
I'd rather talk to celebrities like you guys.
Who's, in your opinion, you like that seg right there? I'm going to shift. Mm-hmm. Who's, in this... debatable, depending on who you ask, but on your show, who is the most famous person you think you've ever had, you've interviewed?
I get this question all the time.
Damn it. And I'm hoping to be unique.
I look at it as what genre? Okay. So in film.
Okay.
One day, I think it was about two, I think it's been 2 years. And it's funny, a lot of my celebrity guests, I'm contacted. Very few of them I contact, but a lot of them now they're coming to me. So about 2 years ago, I got contacted by Alan Arkin's people, Oscar-winning actor Alan Arkin. For television or for film, he's number one. But it's also still to this day my favorite interview of all time because I had to abide by rules when interviewing Alan. And they told me no questions regarding the film career. This questions only based on his memoir. I said, okay, great. So I read the memoir and I created all of the questions from scratch because usually I will ask publicists and booking agents, you supply me with the questions only to guide the interview. That way I know if the guest has something to promote, if it's a film, a new album, whatever. I want to make sure that I had everything there that needed to be said, but I will have some questions on my own. But with Alan, everything came strictly from me. So till this day, it is my number one favorite interview. When it comes to music, this is the toughest question of all because how do you look at music? So I've got to put, so I know tons of famous guitar players and for that genre, I'd probably have to put Steve Vai
At
the top. And he was so nice because he actually allowed me to interview him twice because I interviewed him at the time for my podcast, which was audio at the time. Then I think it was probably 5 minutes after that, I had a radio show in afternoon drive time on Friday in Chicago. And so he stayed so we could do, I think, a 12-minute segment live for the radio program. So Steve was super cool.
Very cool.
But before that, it was funny because when I started my podcast, I would say, you know, I was talking to the people that I was with at the time, and I said, well, I'm going to be doing celebrity interviews. And they looked at me like I was crazy. I don't know what the problem was. So my seventh interview was Phil Collins of Def Leppard.
Ooh, okay.
And sure. The thing about that interview was, and I love that interview still to this day, even more so than the Steve Vai, but the Steve Vai ones was really good. But with Phil, I asked permission from the outfit that I was recording my show with. I said, look, I know that you only allow 30 minutes, but I need 45. And so they gave me 45 minutes to interview Phil Collin, and it was the most stellar interview. But I've interviewed other guitar players, Doyle Dykes, Eric Johnson. I mean, the list goes on. But you know, music's tough because just the other day, this week, I got to sit down with Don McLean, American
Pie. Yes,
according to the Library of Congress, that is the fifth most important song in American musical history. Wow. The fifth. Number one is Over the Rainbow by Judy Garland, but his is number five. So I got to sit down with him for 30 minutes this week. And you know, it was kind of funny because I'm like, wow, Don McLean, because he has a brand new documentary out. And so I watched the documentary, the screener prior to the interview, and then really realized the importance of that song. So I've had so many opportunities interviewing some of the greatest musical acts. And they're embedded in my memory forever.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, man, because I have led that life as well. And, you know, I would have to sit down and think about all the acts. But a few for me that come to mind that were just so just wow. George Thorogood.
Oh, man.
He was amazing. And he gave me all the time in the world. His people said, you know, you get 10 minutes. We're promoting the show. And I pre-recorded it, of course, so I could chop it up and stick it in the show whenever I felt like it. But, man, we talked about 35, 45 minutes when initially it was like, I get 10 minutes. And he was great. A one that sticks out, and if you ever end up watching this, I apologize, Joe. I apologize, but I got to say it. And you know, interviewing people, sometimes it doesn't go well. And you need to, you know, there's a lot of dead air and you got to come up with stuff and they're not reacting to your questions. And there's a lot of ums and ahs and pauses.
Yeah. But see, I got a system that does not happen.
Okay. Well, Joe Perry of Aerosmith and the Hollywood Vampires, he was very slow. And I don't know if it was in the middle of his health scare or whatnot, but it was painstaking getting through that one and asking questions.
Yeah. Cause see, I like the legends, but at the same time, because I know so many publicists and, you know, there's a lot of new upcoming acts and new recording artists that want to make a name for themselves. And I've come across talent that is absolutely incredible. It makes all the stuff we listen to on the radio sound like junk. Mm-hmm. And because I know how people get on the radio and if knew how that system worked,
mm-hmm.
they'd be looking elsewhere for real music. But, man, I hear you on the musical acts. I think one of my favorite ones, I was standing in the grocery store with my wife, and a publicist called me because it'd probably been about a month prior to that. I had interviewed Joe Bonzel of the Oak Ridge Boys. And so he calls me up, and he goes, hey, will you interview the Oak Ridge Boys like next week at such time? And I went, all four of them? And he's like, yeah, I literally thought I died and went to heaven. and the funny thing is now I have interviewed each of them individually except for Dwayne Allen. And I've interviewed William Lee Golden twice. And the funniest thing was after the first interview with him, he says, hey, When you come to Nashville, you let me know. Come out to my house, or we're gonna have dinner. It's like, okay.
I hope you took him up on that.
Well, we got a major trip to Nashville being planned, and I've got to tone it down a bit because all of the publicists in Nashville are literally like begging for certain clients to be interviewed in person. So
yeah,
we're working through that, but I'm friends with a lot of them now. It's just the strangest thing.
Yeah, it's great.
I think for me, like a lot of my favorite interviews are the bands that were really big in the late 90s, early 2000s that have new projects coming out now. Seeing the excitement, knowing some of these guys from back when they were huge back in the day and seeing the newfound excitement and hearing the stories of how they, you know, had a lull in their career and now they're just kind of blowing up again. Those are some of my favorites.
I mean, about a month ago, I was interviewing John Elefante, who had sung, he was lead for Kansas there for a while. And, but when I checked his backstory, I mean, the guy was Mastodon.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, John. And so he had a brand new album come out. And here's this guy's like, in his 50s, and when you listen to his brand new album, you're like, man, your voice has never aged. And to me, his brand new album, I think it's called The Amazing Grace, is probably one of the best rock albums I've heard in the last 3-4 years.
Nice.
And the stories we get, incredible. The stories we get.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. The stories we get from some of these guys. One of ours, we did, gosh, about a year and a half ago now, Mark Farnar, Grand Funk Railroad. Yeah. I mean, he's telling us stories about being on the bus with Joplin and just like, wow. Yeah. You know, and I'm amazed you even remember this. These are the acid years, you know, but.
Well, yeah. I mean, when I was talking to Phil Collin of Def Leppard, he was telling a story. He was walking through the mall. Okay. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, rock stars do go to the mall.
Yes, they do.
And he was passing by the food court and he looks up and he sees Ozzy Osbourne. So he walks over there. Hey, Oz, what are you doing here? And all of a sudden he just looks at Phil and goes, hey, you want to go do wheatgrass shots? And I'm thinking, Ozzy Osbourne's going to do wheatgrass shots, okay? And it's just really cool, funny stories, because like right now we're in the midst of producing our Elvis Week TV special, and my gosh, the stories I have already been told. And just yesterday, Jerry Schilling called me, and we were on the phone talking. He said, hey, man, he goes, I've got to reschedule our interview to another date because Netflix is coming in to film a documentary that they want me to produce, and Priscilla's going to be here. And I'm thinking, and the funny thing was, is when it comes to reschedules, I don't get all bent out of shape. It's just part of the industry. And I started laughing. I'm like, this is awesome. I got trumped by Netflix and Priscilla Presley.
Yeah, you'll take that one every day of the week.
I will take it every single
and,
time.
And I do apologize now also for because we had to reschedule this one. Yeah. And you were so kind. Again, Dr. Ward Bond on Dadcast. We had to reschedule him because I think Nick had something. No, it's totally my fault, actually. I think I was in Vegas or something. Well,
no, you know, it's funny because, you know, the greatest thing is, you know, before I really got into doing this, I created and filmed a television show called Guitar Asylum that only aired in Houston late night. And so it would air like Saturday nights at 12:30 in the morning. And so we would interview all of these heavy metal guitarists that everybody knew. And then we would do guitar lessons within the program. It was just this crazy format that we had. We would even air these old 60s, 70s movie trailers, like these, horror movie trailers, or, you know, where you would, if any of you people remember this out there, when Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon television would be where you would watch a horror flick. But back then it would be giant spiders crawling through New York City or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So we would have, so we got hooked up with this company that had all of the trailers. So we put all that into this crazy show. What we didn't know at the time was how many people were actually watching. So we'd all of a sudden we get these guitar players going, oh man, when I get home from a gig, I turn it on and that's what I watch just to wind down for. I have to go to bed at 2 a.m. And so we would air it on Houston television here on Saturday night. Then we would upload the very next day. And the moment that it would get upload, bam, 50,000 views. And then as we were checking the algorithms, we found out that they kept replaying all the guitar lessons over and over again.
Right. And I'm assuming this is pre-YouTube.
No, it was YouTube.
Okay.
See, we had a problem with YouTube because they didn't believe that we actually produced the show.
Oh, yeah.
And this was like 9 years ago. I mean, YouTube to this day, I still hate them.
Well, we don't, and we're broadcasting live on YouTube.
Yeah, but anyway, okay. There, you know that there can be, if I wanted to air a recording artist's music video, they get mad.
Yeah. And the whole copyright and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
When
we have permission, but go ahead.
So now that you've, by the way, if you haven't noticed, we've switched back to Dadcast doing the interview. I don't know. That's just kind of, it naturally progressed there. That was good. Your kids, you said they're into music. And now with talking with you, I'm getting the sense that you are a fan of music, in particular rock, and leaning to the metal side of things. Is that a safe assumption? As a fan, you personally?
Metal, no. And actually, when I created that television show, my idea was not to be metal, but my host, he was very deep into metal. He knew everybody. Okay. So that's when we started getting all the hookups with everybody. But to me, it was a learning experience. But I love classic rock. I think the 70s is still the best music era ever. And if you don't believe me, then all the greatest rock bands, all the members are in their 70s right now.
Yeah.
And they're still touring and they're still selling out crowds. 80s, we're going to see that. 90s, I don't know. Maybe into the early to mid 90s, yes. Into the 2000s, I don't think anybody's going to care about that genre.
Yeah, and by the time it comes to the point when they're 70s, we're all going to be dead anyway, so we won't see.
we won't have to live about, classic grunge radio and stuff like that. But, you know, but it was funny because it'd been a while, and I always loved country, but I love country more now because as I interview these people, I hear the backstories.
Yes.
And it makes you appreciate. I mean, like when I interviewed Don McLean the other day, I appreciate him more than ever once I started hearing him talk and hearing the backstory. And I have a much greater appreciation. But the great thing is, and you guys, it's the same way with you. When you impress the booking agent, when you impress the publicist, and when your guests go back to them and say, man, I love that, loved being on their show, they start bringing you all their clients.
Yeah, that's a fact. We've already experienced this.
Well, yeah, because you and Nick, even myself, we know being on this side of the mic or the camera, every time we interview somebody, we're auditioning.
That is true. And I hope the audition is going well with you, good sir.
Yes, it is. I think I may get the part.
Okay, I think you might. But there is a... as far as getting the part to solidify your chances, you can just plant the seed with any one of your guests you've ever had on to come on Dadcast. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah, anywho, now I was asking a question earlier. You're like, we're moving on. Have your kids taken advantage of you in a good way when it comes to who you are and who you know to help further, to impress a friend or something along those lines? Have they ever used your clout to gain an advantage?
No.
Okay. Easy one-word answer.
Yeah. And I appreciate it, but if they wanted to, I wouldn't really care.
Right.
That's what dads are for.
Yep.
And, but no, they never have.
Okay. Now, have they ever met someone that they were just, starstruck by because dad knows them?
Yes. I have allowed them to give me a question that I would ask. Like when I interviewed Steve Vai. So my son, I think the first concert I ever took him to was Steve Vai. And so I said, do you have a question that if it fits in with the interview, I'll ask Steve. And I did. So, and the great thing is Steve absolutely loved the question. And now my daughter, oh my gosh, she can come up with questions on the musical side. It was so funny. She ended up on the podcast or something like with Duran Duran and John Taylor and the girl that always helps them do that whole thing. My daughter was 13, I think, at the time. And she asked John this bass question. And John started laughing. He's like, there is no way that girl's 13. She's got to be 40 because nobody asked me that.
Right.
But what was funny was we had gone to NAMM one year in L.A. And so my daughter was 15 at the time. And I'm going around trying to, line up certain interviews. And so I just handed her a stack of business cards. And so she's going around, and then my television director was with her, and I was off doing something else at NAMM, and then all of a sudden she comes back, she goes, we got an interview. And I said, who'd you get? Michael Anthony of Van Halen. And I was like, and she goes, but I have to do it. And I go, what do you mean you have to do it? The manager said, because I asked and got the interview, I have to be the one to interview Michael Anthony. And I'm going, cool.
Yes.
Atta boy, dad. So we filmed it, got it. Now, I didn't even get to go up there. And the funny thing was is the tour manager was there, and he said, because I said yes, you owe me a bottle of vodka. So I said, give me your address. Yeah. So, but the funny thing is we got it on tape. She was nervous as a cat. And my director, and the funniest thing is on that day, he literally was wearing a Van Halen t-shirt.
The universe, that's the stars, awesome. The stars aligned, yeah, on that particular,
yeah,
day.
Yeah. And then my son used to be, he would go to the big music festivals with me when I'd be lining up 12 bands for interviews, either interviewing them on the tour bus or backstage or whatever. So he'd be with me on that and got to experience a lot of that too. So
amazing.
I think that's the best part of this whole thing too, like doing concerts. I've been a concert promoter for like 25 years. So I've known a lot of the big bands that have come through and remained friends with them. So when they play the big venue in Jacksonville, Oregon, I get to bring my kids out. And so my son's actually met like Matt Sorum from Guns N' Roses when he played with Hollywood Vampires. He was a drummer at Grants Pass High School his whole high school career. So,
well, I'll tell you something really quick and funny. My daughter was with me. Some of these bands, as you know, if you're going to interview them on location, this is what I call pre-COVID days.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get the call and you got to hightail it to the venue. You know, because sometimes they wait till the last minute to let you know if you got clearance. So I got clearance for Megadeth. But I got the interview with David Ellefson. And so my daughter was with me, but I had to do the interview because my host, who knows them, he was off doing something and he couldn't break away. So I had to go and do the interview. So I had to set it up differently. So my daughter comes with me. We're hauling tripods and cameras and all this stuff. And the tour manager brings us into the venue and puts us in one of the dressing rooms. Wrong dressing room, because it belonged to Dave Mustaine.
Okay.
And for those of you who hear my tone of voice, you know, Dave's a nice guy, but there are times when you just don't be taken to the wrong dressing room. And Dave was as nice, but he kind of glared at the tour manager like, what are they doing in here?
Right.
Wrong room. But David Ellefson, I mean, gem of a guy, great interview. But she loved, I mean, you know, she was, and my daughter was scared to death when Dave Mustaine walked in. She's like, because she had heard stories,
mm-hmm.
you know. But they like it when they get to come with me.
Nick, awesome. Have you put together a fast five today for Mr. Dr. Ward Bond?
I did.
All right. So here's a segment we like to call the fast five. And you don't need me to explain any further, Nick. Have at it.
All right. So do you have any advice for dads of adult kids? I'm going to mix up my questions a little bit this time.
I think
he's stealing my main question, by the way.
Well, I think for adult children, you look back in time, realize your mistakes, and don't do them again. You know, I think when it comes to, you know, as we're dealing with our kids from toddlers to elementary to middle school to high school, those are hair-pulling years for multiple reasons. But then when they get to be adults, you know, you love them 10 times more.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Your proudest dad moment.
Oh my gosh. that's tough. That's really tough because both my kids are extremely smart. I'm proud of my son. I mean, he's one of the top real estate agents in Houston, Texas, and he did it all on his own. And, aced everything and extremely successful. I'm, you know, when he got his license, I was extremely proud. For my daughter, man, she's an assistant producer for me. But just talented. I mean, she can sing, she can play anything with strings on it, but I just love her because she's my daughter.
Is she hanging out behind the scenes right now?
No.
Oh, darn it. Cause I was going to put her on the spot.
Yeah, because what's funny is that sometimes I'll be interviewing someone or I'll say, hey, I got an interview with so-and-so. And they're like, oh, my gosh, are you kidding me? I said, well, yeah, if you want to sit off to the side and watch it in the same room, you can. But they never do. But they always – but I know sometimes they they hide outside my door just so they can listen. And I think the funniest time is when I interviewed actor John Schneider, which is probably my fan's favorite interview. And my wife was going all giddy. She's like, oh, my gosh, that's Bo Duke.
Yeah, right? I stumbled across that exact episode.
Yeah, it was actually
10 minutes before we got on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the biggest that I think that interview alone is when publicists watch it. It's like, I don't know what it is. There's just something magical about that interview. I love the interview. It's in my top five. And yeah, I mean, my biggest bucket list interview was Mario Andretti.
Nice.
Because I'm a racing fan. And the funniest thing about that interview was because my son and I were big Formula One fans. And so towards the end of the interview, Mario goes, I'm very impressed with your racing knowledge. So after the interview, I told my son, I said, if you ever argue with me about racing, I am just going to pull the Mario Andretti on you because he said I have extensive racing knowledge, so you can shut up.
Yeah, when Mario Andretti tells you.
That's right.
Yeah, Mike dropped. Yeah. All right, Nick, go ahead. Number three.
If you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it be and why?
Oh, my gosh. Man, I don't want to sound like a cliche, but geez. I'm going to be narcissistic here for a second. If I could have a billboard, I want it on Sunset Boulevard announcing my brand new show.
There you go. That's the purpose and point, good sir. Yes.
So when we first started the show, well, we were like a weekend, I bought a billboard on the busiest street in Medford. I think the street gets like 60,000 cars a day or something. It's like the busiest street in Medford that said Dadcast, the number one parenting podcast in the world.
Or two.
It is. It is, right?
Well, but not at that time.
Not at that time. At that time, I think we had two listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You know, I've heard the saying, fake it till you make it.
Oh, yes.
Well, here's the thing. You got to think like it to make it. And so if you want to put a billboard out there and you got two listeners that say you're the number one, do it. Because the way I look at it is it's called a step of faith and speaking things into being.
Absolutely. Manifesting it into existence. And you know what?
Amen to that, JP.
If those two people said it was the number one podcast in their mind, we weren't lying.
That's right.
Lives, but whatever.
Right. Yeah. Right. Nick.
Yeah. What's your favorite? So when your kids were little, what was your favorite meal to cook for them?
Wait, you mean me physically cooking?
Did you do any cooking?
Did you do any cooking? Yeah.
Well, but it wasn't like just for them.
Right.
Right.
I'm just going to say when they were kids, I guess the favorite food, I guess, was probably pizza. But we also knew how to make our own. So that way, you know, you're not dealing with all of the, you know, the junk in the delivery. There's a way to do it the healthy way. But, yeah, I guess it was probably pizza. I mean, it was just easy, you know. But the problem today is if you walk, if everybody's home and you go, what does everybody want for dinner? Bad move if you got a bunch of kids.
Oh, man, don't I know it.
Don't ever say it. If you want to ruin your evening, just pull that question out and you're going to get 10 different answers.
Yeah, the worst is when my wife's like, hey, hon, what do you want for dinner? I don't know. That's why I married you.
That's why a successful marriage, there's only two words you need to know. Yes, dear.
Yes, dear.
Exactly. last one. What is the funniest parenting fail that you've had?
Funniest parenting fail?
Fail. Blunder.
Man.
Like leaving your kids in a shopping cart at the grocery store and driving away.
That's Nick's, by the way.
No, I think it would probably be you forget to go pick them up from school. I think that's probably the biggest blunt. If I can remember right offhand, I think that would be it. And I think it only happened a couple of times.
More than once.
A couple of times.
But that, can you recall that feeling, that pit in your stomach? Just, oh, man. It's almost as bad as when you lose your kids in your own house. My son was probably a year and a half, just learned how to crawl. So he's just all over the place. And he ended up underneath the curtain on the sliding by the sliding glass door, but he was so thin and itty bitty that you couldn't tell that at the bottom he was covered up. So I spent, 20 minutes freaking out. I'm like, I can't call mom yet. I can't call mom yet. There's no way he can reach the door and leave. Where did my son go? Why has he disappeared? And I finally found him because a little toe was sticking out. But whew, that was some scary stuff, man.
It is. I mean, to me, the scariest thing is if when you feel that you've lost your kid in a store.
Oh.
And, yes. Of course, in this day and age, oh, my. I cannot even imagine being a parent of young children in today's time. I cannot even fathom that. I mean, to me, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily different, though. I just think the fact that everyone has one of these and the world is that much smaller, you know, though the world isn't necessarily a better or worse play. I've got something I can show you, but we're not going to do that on the air.
So yeah, I got a real quick funny story.
I got one.
Two days
Texas.
Ago, Liam has decided he likes to play hide and seek. So I'm home alone with him and all of a sudden I don't hear him. And I'm like, where's Liam? I look everywhere. He locked himself in the bathroom and just like was sitting as quiet as he possibly could. It literally took me 30 minutes to figure out he was locked in the bathroom. Finally, I get into the bathroom. I open the door and he's got the biggest smile. He's like, gotcha.
Okay. Mine do that. My two are absolute practical jokers, but they don't do it as a ha ha. They do it with dead serious look on their face. And then you come across with the wrong reaction and then you look like a fool.
Right.
but they think it's funny.
Well, keep in mind, Liam's 2 years old. I don't understand how he understands the concept of joking with somebody or that whatever he's like. He literally sat in the bathroom for 30 minutes and just
they're sponges, smile. Nick. And look at who his dad is. He knows.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I used to do the worst
with
thing.
Mom every day. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I would, you know, my idea when they were really young, joking was doing it with a straight face and acting like it was, you know, fact when you were really, you know, just joking around with them. Then you could do the gotcha part, but you reap what you sow.
Oh, yes.
You get paid back. So yeah. I've been paid back.
Dr. Ward Bond, PhD, I have one final question for you. It's close to relating to what Nick said earlier, but I feel it is one of the most important questions I ask on this show, and I love hearing the broad range of answers I get from all of our guests. What is one bit of advice you can give to any new or expecting father based on your vast experience as a dad?
You are not giving a manual. You will not be giving a manual to parent. Number one, when it comes to, especially with new dads, remember, they will not be small forever. But take every single day, every single time, you are there to teach them, to guide them, to give them wise advice. If you have never been given wise advice, then you go find someone who is successful at being a dad and find a mentor. But in the end, between you and your child, you be there, you believe them, you protect them, you never call them names. You've been handed a lump of clay and you are needing to mold them. And it is your job to mold them. And is it hard? Yeah, it can be. But as long as you operate in love, that you inspire them, motivate them, always encourage them. I mean, I failed. I got a list of failures on that side of things. And I can now say what needs to be done. And but always love them and always make time and do your very best to always put them ahead of your own dreams.
There you go, because our dreams now belong to them. I agree 100%. And one of my favorite quotes, it only takes a moment to make a moment.
Oh, I love that.
Feel free to use it, man.
I'm going to use it.
Okay, you know what? One final question to lighten the mood, and then we're going to let you go. Sure. You can have one guest, living or dead, that you've never had on your show. Who's it going to be?
Wow. That's extremely tough. So, because I like to do in-depth interviews, I'm gonna have to pick one man, one woman.
Okay.
Elvis.
Well, thank you very much.
Princess Diana.
Ooh.
All right. Maybe we can make that happen in the afterlife. There's got to be a podcast out there somewhere.
I've got a interview that I've done that we have not released, but we're gonna release it on August 29th, the 25th anniversary of Diana's death. I did an in-depth interview with her private voice coach that no one knew about, and we got an absolute beautiful inside story, and I cannot wait to release it.
That is amazing. And where can everyone who is interested in checking out Dr. Ward Bond, if you've never heard of him or are curious as to what his show is all about, where can we find you, good sir?
For television, CTN Network, Monday through Friday, direct to Dish TV. Check your local listings if you have one of those carriers. 12 noon Eastern time, again, Monday through Friday. I've got a weekend radio show Saturday mornings on KXKS 1190 AM in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, New Mexico. And then all of the big interviews, not only do they appear on the radio show, they're on our podcast. So check Spotify, iTunes, the list goes on, and you can watch them on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. So, check us out there. So we try to cover the gamut for everybody.
Yes, as do we. Excellent. Dr. Ward Bond, awesome. You have been amazing. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day and coming on the show. I hoped, we did good on this interview on this audition as you did. To everyone watching and checking out Dadcast and supporting it and loving it and liking it up on YouTube, please give it a subscribe, make a comment, do all that good stuff. You know the drill. Hit the bell, yada, yada, yada. Thank you so much for your support. Dr. Ward Bond, thank you.
Thanks.
And we will catch each and every one of you on the very next episode. Have a great rest of your day. See you.